Coming up on today's episode, Rocket Lab is ahead of schedule on something. There's updates to the Las Vegas boring tunnel, and there's a Model 3 refresh that you can see right here today as we get ludicrous. Hey there, and welcome to Our Ludicrous Future. This is the podcast where we talk about all the cool future stuff that's happening today that's going to make tomorrow totally ludicrous. I'm Joe Scott with the Answers with Joe YouTube channel, and with me is the one, the only, the incomparable, Tim.
Is incomparable good? I don't even know what that means.
You have no comparable.
I have no comparables. Hi, it's me, Tim Dodd, without comparables, and with us, as always, is also Benjamin Solins.
The highly comparable. But see, I feel like, is that one of those things comparable. Where it's like, because Joe, you had a video on this, flammable and inflammable mean the same thing?
They mean the same thing, yeah.
Which does make sense because...
Inflammable means flammable?
Yeah, because inflammatory means like bad, right? Like it's well, like... Like if that's an inflammatory statement, it's like a mean, aggressive statement, right?
And which so I guess, but inflammatory.
Yeah, I guess you wouldn't say that's a inflammatory statement. I bet you could.
Who knows? Anyways. English sucks.
Are you inflammatory?
We're actually changing up the show, guys. This is all about words. Language. We're just going to talk about the nature and
welcome
history of
to
words.
Our linguist future.
Our word-a-chris future.
Not bad.
Thank you.
And as with always, we have here our Discordian members. Hello, Discord. How are you guys doing today?
We've got. Okay, so while we're on the subject of words, I've never understood why Discord is named Discord, because if two people are in Discord, that means they're arguing. So is Discord where you go to argue?
Hopefully not. Our community doesn't seem to do that.
That's always bug me a little bit.
But does Discord mean negative? Like an argument? Or I guess an argument isn't
negative.
Let's
stop with language. The one, I'm going to end this language debate, because I'm happy to see that what's your normal name? I can't even remember now. Seznik or something?
Yeah.
Changed his name to Tremor Seismic, and I just think that's fantastic. So
that's
thanks, Trevor.
Wonderful. So if you want to be one of these cool cats and kittens that gets to learn all about words, you can do so at olfpod.com/Patreon. That's where you can become a part of the family and join us live and virtually in person every single week as we try to understand how technology is going to shape our future. So here we go.
Is that what we did?
Is that it?
I mean, so.
Besides how words shape our future.
Oh, by the way, speaking of technology and stuff, we are going to probably stop doing the highlights channel. So we're no longer going to be pushing that. But you will notice that we are doing timestamps in the description, breaking up the YouTube play bar for easy scrubbing if you so desire. Of course, we appreciate when you guys, you know, listen to it all the way through as a long form podcast. But we understand that sometimes there's just a pressing thing you got to get to before you run into work or something. So. Yeah, just wanted to let you guys know about that little update. It turns out that posting to like eight different things on two different channels is just not worth the time. Because we have to pay someone to do
that. Well, it's actually really cool, and I don't think everyone knows about this, but when you put the timestamps in the description, the play bar on the YouTube player actually, you can separate it out. Is there an easy keyboard shortcut to jump between them? I don't know. There probably
Ooh, there
is.
Might
but...
be.
So anyways,
it doesn't work yet on iPhones, but it works on Android phones.
Well, of course.
But I do love that. I think that's a huge... I'm sure it'll come to the iPhone, you know, as Google doesn't always give iPhones the most updated things.
Trying to make it easy for you guys to get what you need for your daily fix to make you feel better about yourself.
And for anybody who... I get this question actually quite a bit. If you do jump around on the timeline because of the timeline now has the timestamps on it and stuff, a lot of people are worried, like, does this take away from your watch time? And would that hurt you in the algorithm on YouTube and stuff? And I wanted to respond to this because I get asked this a lot. It's sort of yes and no. I mean, your watch time might go down a little bit, but basically anytime you interact and engage with the video in any way, whether it's a comment or a like, or even just jumping around on the timeline, that counts as engagement in the YouTube algorithm. So it kind of counters that a little bit. This is what I understand anyway.
Yeah, and also the idea that maybe if people are more prone to click on the video in the first place, knowing that they could skip around a little and navigate a little easier, it might actually help because there might be people that just avoid it. Like, I'm not clicking on a 2-hour long video, you know, but now there might be people like, I'll click on that and I'll jump to my section or whatever. So we might actually increase engagement that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like it reads it as not so much they don't want to see this and they're clicking away from it. It's more like there's something in this video that they want to see, so they just clicked over to it.
Yeah.
And that feeds the algorithm. So
Yep. Just try to make it easier for you guys. You know, we're here to talk about what we like to talk about, and you know, we just want the best experience for our audience. And that's what the idea was behind the Highlights channel, but it just wasn't performing at all worth the time. So this will be a little easier on the back end,
which
to be able to provide
says
that, for
that
guys.
People weren't really getting much out of it is what, how that boils down. So,
we're
here for you.
Yeah. So you're not getting anything out of us. Speaking, getting out of us. Wait, is that I don't know. I didn't have an out of that.
Anything.
Before we jump into the news stuff, can I just share a story real quick? Can I shout somebody out real quick before I forget? Is that cool? You guys mind?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, so I want to shout out a gentleman named Holt who recognized me at the grocery store the other day. Somehow, even with a mask on, homeboy realized who I was and he came over and he said hi. And here's the deal. It was the night before the election. And like my wife and I were kind of all stressed out like everybody else was. We were like, let's just go get some junk food. Like, let's just go get some food that we enjoy, but we would never normally eat, you know, because, you know. So I'm literally in like my workout clothes. I'm basically in my pajamas. And I go to the store and you can't really tell right now, but I had just been to the dermatologist. So there's all like, you know, I look like I got leprosy on my forehead and stuff. And so I'm in my pajamas. I got leprosy. And in my cart is Coca-Cola, a Totino's pizza, cinnamon rolls, a fruit pie, like all this garbage. And this dude comes up, he's like, hey, I really like your channel. I'm sitting there like, are you freaking kidding me? And so I was super weird and awkward, even more so than normal. And I just wanted to say to Holt, in case you watch this as well, which I'm not sure if he does or not, but it was good meeting you. And I'm sorry I came off the way I did. So
that's a stretch.
There you go.
That's a stretch. Joe Celebrity Hour had to make sure that Holt knows that he's not always eating cherry pies. Don't worry, Holt.
This is the one time the guy meets me and I look like that. And he's just like, wow.
Virtue signaling, it's called. It's called virtue signaling.
And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe we need to have people that have other people look at them realize that we're all imperfect and we're all just shopping in our underwear or whatever and buying chocolate, you know, like that. We all do that.
If I was signaling a virtue, the virtue I was signaling was I give up on everything.
I feel this way sometimes if I go to a supercharger and I'm like, oh man, like I don't want to get out of the car and walk around and go get something and like, looking like that or something, because that's the only place that anyone ever would recognize me in real life.
Well, yeah.
It's a funny thing.
So speaking of superchargers, my parents got a Model Y. So I have I had not been in a Model Y yet. And my parents had never driven a Model Y. And, you know, as you guys know with Teslas, like lots of times you order something sight unseen. So, I just wanted to say quick congratulations to Russ and Cindy. That's my parents on their first American-made car in 25 years.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
See, that's an interesting way of putting it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What do you do on this photo, by the way? Is this like the profile? The photo looks strange to me.
It's the portrait mode.
Portrait
mode. So it's just shallowed up the field. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
No. But when I saw it, I was like, what? Why is it? Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
good color.
There you go. What?
I like the color of the car.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The blue looks nice. And that's why they named it Blue Bayou. And at first I'm just like, Dad, you can't name it Blue Bayou. We don't live anywhere. Stop. Okay. He tried to name it. I used to be in this percussion ensemble or like a duet with my friend Tom. And my dad's name for it was Cedar Swamp Buckets.
Yes.
And we were just like, Dad, he's like, no, because think about it. Cedar Falls. You live in Cedar Falls. Cedar a swamp. You're kind of like jungle music, so swamp. And you play on buckets, cedar swamp buckets. And we're like, Dad, that's nothing. No, no.
That's a great name.
And so now my dad's living out his jungle slash, like, I don't know, swamp fantasies with Blue Bayou. But then he explained it and he said it's because it's like Blue Bayou at the stoplight, like blue past you. I was like, okay. And the car is blue. I'm like, okay.
You can have putting one. Thought into it. You can't say he's not putting some thought into those names.
It's true.
I don't know why this came up, but didn't Grimes change her name to just like one letter now or something?
Oh, did she?
Probably.
I don't know. I saw something like that. Or their kid's name, just like, it's like a number. It's like 7 or something. I don't really know. Someone
but
knows.
My parents, generally very happy, but there's 2 big gripes they have.
Ooh, Homelink has to be one.
Homelink is one.
Yeah. It's a reasonable gripe. I agree with this gripe, 1,000%.
Yep. So as we've talked about on the show, and as Ben has a video about, there is no standard Homelink thing. You know, every other Tesla's had. You have to buy $300 thing to make it open your garage door.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it has to be installed by Tesla. You can't just order it with the car. is the dumbest thing.
That was my real gripe, was I don't care if it costs money, but don't make me have to go back to the service center for it. That's so dumb. Like, just install it, like get it at the service center, install it, and then have me pick up the car.
Like, well, so the other option that's supposed to happen is the home link, or like the little garage door button opener, is supposed to be able to trigger a Wi-Fi event or like do something over Wi-Fi. Or that's kind of why he said that they're going to cancel it, because he's like, only less than half the people that own these cars use Homelink. And sure, I guess
buy that,
but so my dad bought, like, on Amazon, like on Prime Day, where there's like a $15 Wi-Fi to garage door opener thing, right? So you can open your garage door via Wi-Fi, assuming you could program the Model Y, you know, to activate with the Wi-Fi. And nope,
that would be a negative, Ghost Rider.
So that's a pretty big gripe, because it's like, that's annoying on a $50,000 car.
That's why I made that video, because I thought it was dumb. I think it's a stupid thing. And it's one of those things, like, I used to rent this space downtown in San Diego. And so I was at WeWork before. I went to this other place, which I won't name, but they were trying to be like a WeWork. And when I got there, they have this really big, cool coffee machine. And then later they started making you pay for the coffee, whereas it was free before. Now, the cost of the coffee was like $1 or something. So clearly they're not making money on this. But because of that one thing, I just griped about it to everybody. I'm like, this place sucks. It's total BS. Like, they make you pay for the coffee. And I'm looking at it going, you are definitely losing clients because of this one thing that is definitely not worth the money for you. Mm-hmm. Like, the outsized impact. This is how I feel Homelink is. Like, if you just throw it in there, people won't comment on it. If you don't throw it in there, it's a huge ordeal. It's kind of like
raise the price by $250 and include it, as opposed to...
Well, and isn't the new iPhone doesn't come with a charger or something like that? And people are all up in arms about it?
But okay, that's a different story. Like, that I kind of agree with. I wish they had made it USB-C, so it's just C2C.
It's not USB-C?
Still not USB-C.
Oh my God.
Because we have a million chargers
around.
It is wasteful, but you know what's more wasteful is giving people a USB-C to Lightning cable that will only be good for a year, and then next year giving them a USB-C to USB-C. Okay. Anyway, the other gripe with the Model Y is your only options right now are standard autopilot, which is free, or you spend $10,000 on full self-driving. The problem with the free autopilot, there's no lane change. So if you're driving
down
the interstate,
even if you hit it, it doesn't work?
If you hit it, what you have to do is you have to disengage autopilot, change lanes, re-engage autopilot. Now, I know that sounds like the most first world problem ever, but when you are on a road trip and you're changing lanes, you know, 50 times in an hour, that means 50, doo-doo, doo-doo, or like, or 50, that weird sound it makes, and that it's not working, you know? It's like, why can't you at least make it so you don't have to disengage it, you know, like turn signal, you steer it over, and then it automatically re-engages or something.
I need to do this. I need to do this in a video.
My parents are very like annoyed by that. They're like, because when they drove my car, you know, in March across from Florida back home, you know, I had my dad do non-navigate on autopilot. So, you know, it wasn't doing the navigate on autopilot stuff. And so he was you use the turn signal, it automatically lane changes, or, you know, not, or it does the lane change for you. And we assumed that's what the non-navigate on
autopilot
was. So now, I think they need to change that.
Have they checked their app yet? Because Tesla did bring back enhanced autopilot, and I think that was only $4,000. And that would definitely include that one feature. So if they haven't checked that, I would have them check that.
Well, it's not a, yeah. It's a, yeah, it's not an option for a new one, but it might, yeah, they might still be able to do that now. And
well,
the problem
is,
I think when they purchased the car, I'm pretty sure it still would have had that feature, which is annoying. You know, they've changed it like 3 times since June.
Tesla brings back enhanced autopilot before end of Q3, aiming for a strong quarterly result. This was in September. So what does enhanced autopilot include? Enhanced autopilot will include navigate and autopilot auto lane change for $5,300. Or I'm sorry, for $3,000.
See, so that would have been probably more like it, but...
But this is only after you purchase the car. This isn't something you can purchase before the car. So if they haven't looked, they might... I mean, it's not free. It's not included in the regular autopilot, which I think is their complaint.
I'm gonna text them now.
Yeah, but that... there might be an option, I guess. Like, it sounds like... Yeah.
Well, there's my story for the week. So congrats, Cindy and Russ, on your... new Tesla. They're very excited about it, though. Otherwise, they absolutely love it. They are is like quieter and more like better ride than my car. It got great range. We were both coming home from Minneapolis. They had to pick it up in Minneapolis, and it was getting very similar watt hour per mile. That's one thing I'm trying to figure out. If the battery pack is 5% more dense with these new batteries or whatever the thing is it actually more like an 80 kilowatt hour battery pack now?
Model Y?
The Model Y. Like, the efficient, you know, it's supposed to be able to do like 330 miles or whatever now.
Yeah. I got 252.
With big rims.
Oh, fine. But it's rated at 322 with those big rims.
Is it?
So, yeah. Hmm.
Yeah. But they were getting similar watt hour per mile on the highway as I was in the Model 3. So
that's good.
Cool to see.
Yeah. Impressive. And I think mine only got 70 kilowatt hours. That was used energy. So,
how many?
I don't know. 70, I believe, was the final. Yeah.
So you may have had 5 more. There you go. That's my leading story. What
congratulations,
are
Cindy and Russ. Speaking of new Teslas, we could talk about the Model 3 refresh.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
We've kind of known about
this. Is this like the console stuff?
Yeah. Right. Now, is this... Okay, Tim, can you click on the little translate button up there?
No.
My Mandarin or whatever isn't up to...
I don't want to, and I also can't find it.
in the URL bar on the right next to the star, there's a little...
Oh,
that guy.
Okay. Yep. There we go. Ayo.
It
didn't... There you go. First look at new Model 3. Okay, so this is from ddcar.com.tw. And I believe this is in Hong Kong. We now have, and there's a video there, but if you scroll down past the video, we can see actual photos of all the new stuff with the new 2021 Model 3. We've talked about this. If you haven't heard, there's a lot of changes coming out. I don't know what the first photo is. It's like a darker headlight, maybe. I didn't really gather what that one was. But then as you scroll down, you see the new uglier wheels, I'll call them. We went with the uglier, chunkier style wheel,
yeah,
which
preferred the other.
Maybe is better for aerodynamics, but...
Yeah, almost certainly.
Yeah, but like how much better? It seems really minimal. It has the black trim. So if you go to the third photo, you can see that it has all the black trim. Which is funny that this is like a desirable thing. It's only a desirable thing because chrome was the standard, right? If you go look at like a Prius, they all have the same trim. If you go look at basically every other car out there, the cheapest trim you can buy is this black trim. So it's kind of funny that that it was always desirable for Tesla owners. But there it is. Number four is the double pane glass, I believe is what we're seeing, which will help with the road noise and the sound. So super cool. Number five is the auto trunk, which we knew about and very cool. Number six, I believe, is the new windshield wipers. So where if this is correct, if I could be wrong about this, but on the Model X, they're like this where the actual like fluid, you know, to clean your windshield comes out of the wiper itself. It doesn't like shoot onto the car. It just comes out of the wiper as it goes.
I think that's how it is now. This looks more like the rear trunk lid seal to me. That thing that makes it so it rains water when you open your trunk lid sometimes.
Yeah.
It might be a...
Maybe that's what this is. Yeah. So, and if you guys read this, these Chinese characters in Discord, please tell us what we're looking at here.
Ooh, number seven's a good one. This is in the Model Y. I noticed. Does your Model Y have this, Ben?
No. So the
My parents does.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'd have to look, but I don't recall seeing it. So, on the button that opens the door, there's a little icon now.
Yes.
And now it looks like it's kind of illuminated here. I don't know if that's just the color of it or if that's...
Yep. Well, the
it would make
ones
sense
are
for it to be illuminated.
Yeah.
So you mean new people in the car won't be like, how do you open the door?
They won't open the emergency one and break the window?
Right.
Yep.
What are we looking at for number eight here? Is it the scroll wheels are different?
Oh,
we're looking
at
a steering wheel.
The leather stitching is different. Normally there's like leather.
Yeah,
all around
okay.
it. Maybe it's a totally different steering wheel cover now.
Yeah, steering wheel looks kind of different. Number nine looks like the scroll wheels a touch different. And then you get to the center console. This is the photos that we've seen before.
Yeah, we've seen
where it slides back, and then you have this weird, it's like an Alcantara wireless charging pad. It looks like if you scroll down to number 11.
That looks weird to me.
I'm not really into this, honestly. The center console is not... I don't know.
Yeah, and it's got like leather around the
edges. It seems kind of odd. And now number 12, I think
the door over the phones. I thought that was a nice look, you know, where you could kind of hide the phones, even though it never did, but it just looked nice.
Yeah.
I always do it so that way I don't mess with my phone.
Mm.
Nice. And then number 12 here, this is pretty cool. So they moved the Sentry Mode dash cam USB port where you know, do that to the glove box, and it comes with a 64 gigabyte USB stick when you get it.
That's awesome.
Well, that's good because I had trouble finding the right speed of USB at first, and
And then
the security of it being in the glove box is way smarter than it being in the center console.
And you can now put a pin on the glove box, so you can actually disable the ability to open the glove box without the pin. Which I guess someone could guess your pin, but you know, just don't do the Kanye all four zeros pin. So Model 3 2021. Now this is, it's interesting that we're calling it 2021 because it just seems that's like not how Tesla does things. You know what I mean? And it's weird that Tesla, I still don't believe, has officially said anything about this. Now, again, they don't have a PR team. So, you know, it's hard to say like they're just going to, so do we just name it? Like, you know, we can come up with the names and whatever.
Well, the
I
VINs,
guess that's what's happening.
The VINs. My parents' Y is a 2021 model.
Right, right. But that doesn't, I'm saying from Tesla's perspective,
yeah,
they're not calling it anything different. I guess the Model S isn't different, but you would say the refreshed Model S. Now that's just the standard Model S. But back when it was new, you specifically called it something different.
And they've called that like the 2016 and a half Model S.
Right, because that's when...
Because it came out mid-2016, the refresh, yeah.
Yeah, and that's such a weird... Tesla's like... I feel like how you're doing this video, the like Soviet video on all the rockets, I need to do that with like all the Tesla refreshes. Because it is... Like we think of it as like really simple, but there are so many little things of like, oh, well, you had the refreshed Model S, but it didn't have Autopilot 2 yet.
Yep.
You know, good. And that only lasted for 3 months. And then you got this one, and you're just like, what is going on? So it's pretty complicated.
That would be an awesome video, the confusing evolution of every Tesla ever, and have it be the family tree. I would love that.
Yeah, I'll look at that. My buddy Ryan Shaw did a good video on this. I think he called it like the Tesla FSD mess. And it basically was that just for Autopilot. Wow. And he would explain
when they've
all
turned it on and off and when it's like a different thing.
Well, and then it's like enhanced autopilot, not enhanced autopilot. Full self-driving had these features. Now it doesn't have those features and blah, 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 blah. And you're just like, yeah, it's confusing for sure.
It's a nightmare. Yeah.
Yeah.
So is that just from the Chinese factory though? Or is that going to be over here too?
That should be over here too, but this is the first look at it, the first time that we've actually seen it. And this was a real car in Hong Kong. And cool. There you go.
Well, that black trim thing, I've noticed lately that there's a lot of two-tone cars coming out now. Like that's sort of a design thing going on these days.
You mean with just like the trim or like the top part of the car?
Well, I mean, not in this case, but like I've seen a lot of, like you said, the top of the car has like a black on it or slightly different. Yeah. I've made my point and ran out of words. But no, I'm wondering if that's sort of like tying into this kind of aesthetic that's going on right now.
Hmm. Well, the blacked out chrome is definitely starting to disappear, you know, that's for sure. But well, I do wish,
yeah,
like Richie Builds, one of his guys did a matte like black roof for his, I think, white Model Y and ended it like right at the trunk line. And it looked really nice. I actually would like the roof, you know, the roof line pillars to be black. I think that'd look very slick on a Model 3 or Model Y or whatever. And yeah,
great. So, new Model 3 coming your way, 2021.
Speaking of things
coming... Now, if only they'd upgrade the Model S.
I know. Trust me. Speaking of things that we're waiting on for 2021, Starship Serial Number 8 is still...
Ooh. You have to wait for 2021 on that?
Well, I guess I don't know. Wait, yeah, it's 2020, isn't it? I don't know what year it is or what day. I don't know. Time doesn't exist anymore. But remember last week I was telling you guys kind of right before we signed off, I was saying like, you know, I'm kind of waiting for some milestones before I hit the road. As you guys might notice, I'm still in not Texas.
Not on the road.
I'm not on the road. I was fully expecting by this time I would have left, to be on the road to catch the serial number 8 hop. And remember last week, I think my milestones were, I wanted to see a cryoproof, a new, like, you know, testing of all of the tankage now that because the nose cone has the oxygen tank way at the tip of it. So there's another tank that when they put the nose cone on, which is what I think they were putting the nose cone on, if I remember. Maybe that was 2 weeks ago already. But, you know, I was looking for them to do a new cryo test now that it was like fully, you know, altogether. I was looking for them to do at least one static fire. I'm assuming still multiple static fires. I'm definitely assuming serial number 8 needs to do another 3-engine static fire now that they've had you know, further integrations. You know, anytime you add stuff and are plugging in new things, you might as well double check stuff. So a static fire, but also a header tank static fire, because they do have those two.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah.
Yep, those two header tanks. I wouldn't be surprised if we see two more still. It's looking like next week at this point, like the 9th through the 11th, there's some road closures that would be indicative of static fire, but we still are waiting on the hop, which I think at this point we're like at the earliest, like the 13th or something, you know, the middle of night. What is today? Today's the 5th. Yeah. Like a week from today, I would be like, I'd be surprised if it's even like next weekend at this rate, just because it's still... You know, we're just waiting on milestones. People forget that there's a lot of work going on inside the rocket, literally connecting bits of hardware, you know, literally connecting pipes and wires and making sure everything works and the communications work and all of the things are working properly, you know, as they get ready for the test flight. But
yeah, this 15-kilometer hop is a totally different animal than those 150-meter
Yes.
What was the result of your poll on Twitter about what's going to happen?
That's a good question. It's been a little bit. Let me see, because I actually let it stay up for like 3 days too. So I am curious if people's stuff changed, especially when Elon commented on it. Like I wondered if that skewed the poll. But Okay, so the question that I did on Twitter was, how far into flight? Let me show it so it's easier for you guys to see, since it is a poll. That'll make it easier to see. But it was How far into flight slash landing do you think serial number 8 will make it for its 15 kilometers hop? So basically, what's the last thing it should do, right? How far into it? Like, because I don't, odds are too hard to, you know, predict, or like, I don't know, how do you say that? Like 15% chance it or whatever, you know? So I just like, okay, let's get the last milestone. So 3.5 people think it'll get just off the pad and then explode, basically, RUD, rapid unscheduled disassembly. 15, and then about 18% of people think it'll get to 15 kilometers but lose control falling. So they think it'll, you know, get up to 15 kilometers and then start falling but lose control while falling, basically. 28% of people think it'll make it to that belly flop to tail down landing, but that's the last thing it'll do. And then over half the people, though, 50.7% of people think it'll go 100%, it'll stick the landing.
Is this still going?
No, this has ended. Final results. It was a 3-day poll, I think.
I was going to say we should have stopped the count if it was still going.
But so on this note, Chris B. from NASA Space Flight said, a stable belly flop and a Raptor relight would be a huge win. More than enough data to sort out any subsequent wobbly landing attempt. However, it's going to be on all of us regulars to set expectations as preemptive strike against drive-by media. Elon rocket boom headlines.
Yeah.
And Elon then said, stable, controlled descent with body flaps would be great. Transferring propellant feed from main to header tanks and relight would be a major win. But a RUD right off the launch pad is also possible. Fortunately, serial number 8 is almost ready. That's the thing, is they have serial number serial number 9 is almost ready. They have serial number 9 literally waiting almost. It's like pretty much complete, you know. It now has flaps on it, the rear flaps. They have nose cones galore out there. They've got the hardware just ready to go. You know, this is now a production line. So this would not be detrimental if they lose serial number 8.
So the way I'm framing it in my mind is, it's like, what we're really doing here is figuring out how those flaps are able, how they're able to control it with the flaps. And it's almost like they could just let it slam into the ground and just get the information that they need from the flappy flaps and stuff. Right. But it's like, why don't we try to relight the engines and see what happens?
Yep.
You know, and so it's like, I would say just getting the flap information would be 90% of what they need to achieve from this. And if it actually happens to relight and land appropriately, that would be...
I'm thinking that's
a low percentage chance that they actually pull off the whole thing. I'm just like under trying to be underwhelmed. So if they nail it, it'll be even bigger. But
I'm below, like, well below a third chance of it. You know, 30% if it sticks landing, and that is like, I should say like 5%. I'm not expecting it to stick the landing on this.
I keep thinking it's going to come down and like attempt the landing, but just like, you know, miss it slightly. That's my guess.
Right.
It may be a while. It took for them to.
Yeah, exactly.
How long it took for them to get like just the normal landings on the Falcon 9s. It took a long time to get that right. And this is even more complicated.
Right. Yeah. This isn't just what they've already been doing. It's a totally different maneuver.
Exactly. And, you know, the thing to remember, too, is, yeah, the Falcon 9's landing is easy peasy compared to what they're trying to do here. So this is a compilation from Eric X Space on Twitter.
Oh. Oh, funny.
That's absolutely what I'm expecting. Hang on. I'm going to keep playing it here.
That's great.
It's got that Monty Python music playing.
And this is what I think could very well happen. Like,
it's
too much,
like,
rotation.
Overcorrect. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And then just kind of kaboom.
Yep.
Flamey end.
It's going to be fun to see
down.
Either way.
Yeah. This is, I mean, no matter what happens, this will be, I think this might be the nuttiest thing to see.
Great success.
Of the whole year. You know, like 2020 is already just the craziest year. This might take the cake as far as, like, that was the most insane thing that's ever been filmed.
It will be the 2020 of test flights.
Yeah, I'm down there about 5% myself of this actually working out well, but we'll be there to cover
that's,
it. And
what does that say
insane.
About over 50% of the people responding to that thinking that it'll 100% stick the landing?
That they need,
people are enthusiastic.
Too much faith in or they maybe don't understand the perspective of, like, this isn't really necessarily expected to land on the first try. Like, it's they're entering new territory here, completely new territory. And that this is, and it's okay if they don't land it. Like, it's not, that's not you being a negative Nancy about SpaceX. Mm-hmm. Like, people I think are so fandom about SpaceX. They're like, I can't say it probably won't work. That would be bad. You know, it's like, no, it probably won't work. Like,
it's that, it's that in-team bias, right? It's like the,
Well, I mean, that's the ethos of SpaceX is fail hard, learn and improve next time, you know, like that's that constant rapid iteration and testing and failure. Failure is a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as there's not anybody on it.
Right.
You know,
exactly. And again, the rapid iteration, since they have one sitting there, my biggest concern is not that it will fail, is that it will land and fall on like the tank farm.
Yeah, it'll destroy some other
that'll
stuff.
That'll ruin infrastructure. I'm also, there's a small part of me that's worried that it's going to lose control while falling. Because 15 kilometers, guys, that's really, that's, you know, 60,000 feet, basically. That's really high up there. Or 50,000 feet or whatever. You know, if it's falling from that high, all it needs to do is be like a few degrees off and not be able to quite control itself. And it's going to, it could glide into South Padre Island or Brownsville.
And there are some houses there, right? Not a lot, but...
I mean, South Padre Island is a big old fat island.
Oh, okay.
Hotels.
Brownsville is what I'm thinking. Like, there's like 30 houses or something, right?
Well, Boca Chica Village has like 30 houses, but that's also where... I mean, yeah. But the thing is that this will have flight termination. If it exceeds its perimeter, they will destroy it before it ever gets the chance to.
Oh, so if it starts to float over dangerous area, they can just explode it and then...
Yep.
Yeah.
I still wonder though, like, well, because the flight termination might not necessarily be blow it up, because an explosion of itself would also send stuff even further out.
Well,
right? We've talked about this, I think.
But it decreases, it removes a lot of the energy, you know, because it's, first off, like, when the vehicle is intact, it's this big mass, right? When it slams into the ground, where it hits contact would be huge, let alone the explosive bit of propellant, right? There's a lot of energy there. There's a lot of mass. And it would fall fast because it's all this, you know, interconnected piece, you know, fairly aerodynamic. If you let something blow up, all those little pieces, their terminal velocities are a lot lower. The potential energy from any of those small pieces is a lot less. You know, there's just, they slow down more. But the big thing is you let it blow up before it gets to the point of like reach, you know, like as soon as it's heading in a certain vector and it goes beyond its envelope of where it's safe to fly, like this cone of exclusion zone, as soon as it breaks that perimeter, you blow it up and it physically can't reach, you know, the thing that you're trying to have it not reach. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, if you want to jump from rocket to rocket, I'm curious what this Rocket Lab news is.
Oh, I can actually talk about it now because we're now beyond the embargo. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah,
breaking news. You heard it here first.
Breaking news. You heard it here 24 hours later.
And if you wanted to hear it first, you could have joined us live at olfpod.com/Patreon.
So as you guys know, Rocket Lab has been preparing to recover a rocket for a long time, right? Or not a long time, but last year they announced that they're going to work on first stage recovery. And they said back then, flight 17. They just recently, last week or whenever that was, did flight 15. And now they're putting the recovery hardware on flight 16. They're moving it up. That's huge. Like, that means they're
ahead of schedule.
In the aerospace industry, someone is ahead of schedule. So that's awesome news. As you guys know, we've talked about this quite a bit on the show again, but the Electron will be doing just a passive reentry. It'll be guiding itself just to stay engines first, nice and clean. Those engines in the bottom of the rocket are already capable of handling really high temperatures, so they just keep it pointed so that the booster doesn't like go kind of off angle and get into the hot plasma airstream. And then here's the thing that I learned yesterday on a little call, is that they are no longer doing, on this first attempt, they got rid of that supersonic balut. So they used to have this supersonic decelerator that was going to decelerate them from, you know, going from like supersonic speeds down to subsonic, and then they deploy a chute. So they're just using a more traditional drag chute. That probably means their data came back going, look, we could actually do this with just a standard drag chute. And a drag shoot will probably be simple enough, safe enough, cheap enough, done enough, you know? And to that note, they're also not going to be doing a parafoil, like the steerable parachute.
Yeah, so this is landing in the water. I thought they were going to try to catch it with a helicopter or something.
Couple attempts, they're just going to let it splash down and then go and retrieve it. They basically said, you know, at this point, we don't know enough about, you know, the situation to risk or even have a helicopter in the area, right? For the first couple attempts. Let's make sure we can do this first step. And they're going to be doing it under a circular, a normal parachute, probably more of an off-the-shelf solution. So in other words, they're thinking they might be able to, and then I asked Peter on a conference call, like, hey, so you're not doing the steerable parachute. And he said, yeah, we're going to try it like this first, just for simplicity. But you know, he said there's a chance that we might not need the steerable parachute, you know, for a guided reentry and to be able to, you know, the big thing about a steerable parachute is you can steer into the wind and you can keep your hang time up and you can, you know, maybe increase
the
amount
there.
Yeah. You can stay there a lot longer. So
like
there's
hours,
a chance, you know,
right?
Potentially, yeah, strong enough winds, you know, on coastal areas.
That's how hang gliders and stuff work. Like they can go up, or even paragliders, right? They can literally stay up for hours.
Yeah, you definitely need the right wind currents and stuff like that. You can't just do it anywhere.
Right.
So there, he's saying basically, we're going to check this out first, keep it as simple as possible, and then see what we need to solve from there. Mm-hmm. So they've even practiced recovering the booster from the ocean. They've practiced on a mock-up, scooping it up with like a crane that's an underwater crane on the boat or whatever, and putting it on the deck. So they're practiced and ready to actually recover it from the water. Everything they're going for it, and this is going to happen already mid November. So maybe probably after next week's recording, I think. But this is just awesome news to see that they're going forward with it already. Yeah,
yeah, and that's exciting.
They're
man.
So fun.
They are.
Yeah.
They're just, and even on the conference calls, they're just so chill. Like,
yeah.
You just get the sense that it's not a big deal, that, you know, you're asking them questions and, you know, they'll just be like, yeah. Yeah. I don't, like, for instance, I think Eric Berger from Ars Technica asked on the call, he said something like, you know, what's like, you know, why aren't you making a bigger rocket or something about the bigger rocket? And then Peter Beck goes, well, you know, it's not the size of the rocket that counts, you know, and he just.
Just like, I know, he's, you know, tired just, of getting that question.
Yeah, but it's just that attitude.
I thought they were
really
they're doing electron heavy or something, right?
No, that was a joke.
Oh,
April Fools!
See?
You got to be
careful because see these things stick. My little brain, it, you know.
That's the April Fools that just keeps going.
Well, you're like, wait, that does make sense. Like,
but they did have the possibility of a third stage, right? A third stage.
They are now flying that Photon, which is
okay.
Photon is not only a satellite bus, but it can also be configurable for a simple kick stage, a dual prop, like more energetic kick stage, or an even expanded tank version with the Hypercurie and this like monster of a third stage that's for interplanetary missions. Yeah.
Oh, for Venus, because he wants to go to Venus.
They want to go to Venus and
that's another reason why I love those guys.
I know. Yeah. I know. Isn't awesome. Yeah. So we're going to be definitely paying attention to what they're doing. And they promised they'd bring us video feeds and bring us a bunch of content of this attempt. So let's all just wish good luck to Rocket Lab. And we're all cheering for you guys and can't wait. Yeah.
Sounds good. Well, you want to take a quick break?
Let's do it.
Cool.
We'll be right back.
So, hey, if you listen to our show, you know, we talk about rockets on here quite a bit, or at least Tim does, and things can get kind of in the weeds on that, kind of hard to understand. If that's something you want to learn more about, but maybe you don't want to go back to school or have the time to do all that, one place that I can recommend is our new sponsor, Brilliant, in their classical mechanics course. They describe the classical mechanics course as hardcore training for the aspiring physicist, but don't let that scare you. The thing that's cool about Brilliant is that, if you haven't checked it out, is they walk you through the process of understanding a topic step by step with fun quizzes and interactive puzzles and animations. They basically just kind of hold your hand and let you figure it out on your own. And what's great about that is you learn it in a way that makes sense to you. It's not just memorizing facts and figures. It taps into your innate, you know, problem-solving skills, which of course only gets better with time, and which can help you out in many different areas of your life. The classical mechanics course covers everything from Newton's laws to kinetic and potential energy, reference frames, and of course, the rocket equation. It contains 49 interactive quizzes, and by the time you're done, you might could give Tim a lesson or two. Of course, there are dozens of other courses on Brilliant spanning relativistic physics, quantum mechanics, even logic, and all levels of math. And if you just like solving puzzles and keeping your brain fresh, there's daily challenges that you can pull up and just have fun with in your spare time. So you can sign up for free and test it out for yourself if you go to brilliant.org/OLF, and the first 200 people to sign up will get 20% off a premium subscription that gives you access to all their courses. I've been talking about Brilliant on my channel for years, and I can tell you they just keep getting better. They keep having newer, cooler animations and puzzles and stuff. They keep adding courses, so it's definitely worth checking out if you've never looked at it before. You can go to brilliant.org/OLF. Again, that's brilliant.org/OLF, and try it out for yourself. I think you'll like it. Today's episode is also sponsored by our old friends at Skillshare. Skillshare. You guys are still working from home. Ooh. Lots of people now working from home, and maybe we're all starting to get our hands on some productivity tips and whatnot, but you can always be more productive. So that's why you could check out the productivity class from Thomas Frank, the Thomas Frank's Productivity Masterclass on Skillshare.
It's like an investment in productivity.
Investment in your
beard growing champion, Thomas Frank.
Yeah, he's pretty righteous. So Thomas is a productivity expert and a YouTuber, like some other people you may know in this little thing here that we do. And in this class, he shares some of his best tips for living your best life, meaning organizing your digital files, organizing your inbox, taking notes, task management, all the stuff that keeps you from losing your mind working from home. This is just one of thousands of classes on Skillshare covering everything from business essentials, graphic design, marketing, video production, cooking. Basically, if you're interested in it, there's an expert ready to teach it to you on Skillshare. There's over thousands of classes on there. Isn't that nuts?
That is nuts.
Like, they had to correct me because I had hundreds down first. And they're like, no, it's thousands, sir. It is thousands, sir.
Who makes all these classes? Who has time to make these classes? That's a lot of classes.
Well, the guy on his couch, the pug. The pug has a class. Guitar Zoe. Man, Explosion in the background. The stars. They've all got classes on Skillshare.
Man.
So you can join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare today with a special offer just for our listeners. Skillshare is offering the Our Ludicrous Future listeners unlimited access to thousands of classes for free for a limited time. Just sign up to go to skillshare.com/OLFpod. Again, go to skillshare.com/OLFpod. Who wants to take the third round?
I'll Tim. Beat you. Skillshare.com/OLFpod.
Pod.
Pod, you're bringing pod, your future. Pod. Well, thank you.
OLF
thank you to Skillshare
pod.
For being awesome. Skillshare.com. we jumping into a why don't they just now? Is that the thing?
Oh,
why
is that the plan?
They just...
Well, the music has been played. We got to do it now.
Yeah. Why don't they just?
This one, actually, I don't think I even really have an answer to this, but maybe
ooh.
I do. Maybe. This is actually more of a science-y kind of thing.
Uh-oh.
So let's see what works out. A little bit spacey, a little bit science-y. This actually just came this morning from John Lennox at JohnLennox89. Thank you for reaching out to us. He says, we know that light can generate small amounts of thrust because of the light sail missions. Why don't they just have small satellites to travel long distances propelled by a light source emitting from the back of them? So can you just use a beam of light to push yourself forward? If using a sail, you can generate momentum by receiving light, why couldn't you create thrust by pushing light out the other direction? Why doesn't that work? Why don't they just?
Well, let's hear it, guys.
I just don't think it's enough thrust, or you would need a super high power laser to do it or something. And wasn't Stephen Hawking that had the whole concept of like lasers here on Earth pushing the sail thing? In space, like to propel us to Mars or whatever, you could just have a super high power laser here. I think it sounds like reasonable, but I question if there's enough thrust because that obviously takes energy, and how are you going to store that energy to do that? So it sounds like there's just a math there, and you know, answer is whether or not it's worth it. That's my guess.
What do you think, Tim?
Well, I'm actually trying to think about this because I think my
it
my
doesn't
answer,
sound right, but
my
then
answer
it's like,
changed.
Wait.
Yeah, because so my understanding, and again, I might be wrong on this, but okay, so basically light is massless by definition. There is no mass to a photon, so therefore you don't have a reaction mass you can throw out of the back of a rocket, right? So that's why like ion drives and Xeon drives, they're throwing still lightweight electrons and you know, a mass, a small mass. They're throwing it really fast and a whole bunch of them to produce a small amount of thrust. But the there is no, if you're just shining like a flashlight or a laser beam off the back of a spacecraft, there is no mass to be that's being ejected, you know. So therefore, it physically can't have an equal and opposite reaction. Now, my understanding is light sails work. There's solar radiation and there's solar wind. So there's solar wind is the mass of solar ejected particles actually hitting, you know, and pushing an object around. And solar radiation, or like solar that's I do not understand how, like, I don't understand if is okay, so solar sails, but if you just click how do solar sails work, by capturing the energy from light particles as they bounce off the reflective surface. So it imparts momentum to the sheet, but I just don't understand. I don't know enough about this. I don't know why you could impart momentum and impart inertia into something when it has no mass. That is confusing to me. But solar pressure. I love this. Discord is lighting up. We'll probably get the...
we're just turning to Discord and be like, you guys tell us. Yeah.
It's like on CNN when they're like, let's go to Twitter, and they just start reading tweets.
Yeah.
Because maybe someone out there knows, please.
My assumption is that even if you could generate any kind of thrust from light particles just because they're highly energetic or whatever, kind of to where Ben was going with it, you have to have the mass in some kind of energy storage to push that for long periods of time, and that's just way too much. There's that whole thrust to weight ratio that's just not there. Like, you would have to store all that energy in batteries, and it would have to run for probably years to get like any kind of significant thrust out of it.
Well, and just to and was the idea satellites? So satellites. But satellites right now, do they have any kind of propulsion?
Yeah. They normally will have like a chemical propulsion through like a monoprop or just a kind of a standard small rocket engine.
It's pretty minimal, right?
It depends. I mean, the ones that are like ion thrusters and stuff, you know, like the ones that are on interplanetary missions, they require a lot of electricity, but they're extremely efficient. They can do a lot of big changes. And
Right. I was thinking of the ones that are orbiting Earth.
Some of those even have ion thrusters. Like the Starlink satellites all have Xeon thrusters. So they're using, you know, electric propulsion basically in space.
Because with that, okay, so to get to orbit takes a ton of energy in delta V, right? So the purpose of this would be, to have them fly to, this is like interstellar travel. This isn't just orbiting Earth. Because I'm looking at it like, what is the purpose of having this anyways? So it's saying, if you want to go, well, like the, what is it, Alpha Centauri or something, Stephen Hawking wants, the laser sail thing they want to do. It just seems, the big question comes down to if this is even possible, which I don't know if it is. Where's the energy going to come from, you know? What would be cool is if you could imagine it capturing solar energy. Like, I guess maybe that's a different perspective. If this were already possible, why couldn't you just have it use the energy coming from the sun to propel you?
Yeah.
Like, that would already...
So that's what the Planetary Society experimented with, right?
Mm-hmm.
They did a solar sail, and it works almost just like a sail on the ocean. Like, they can tack it to, you know, adjust the where it's going and stuff. So that's what they've played with. The Breakthrough Starshot program, they're the ones that, they haven't done this yet, but they're working on it. I guess they're raising money and stuff. But they have like postage stamp size little probes that, I mean, they weigh like a gram or something, and they blast those with lasers for a long enough time, and it gets it up, you know, to really high speeds to get out of the solar system. But again, we're talking about like a tiny, tiny, tiny amount of mass. And even then, it's like you're hitting this sail and propelling it forward like that. So in order to store the energy to produce the same effect, you would have to have too much mass for it to ever actually push anything. That's kind of where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think my takeaway is, like, I'm not confident enough in how the momentum gets transferred from, like, the sun's beams of light and photons of light, how it reacts against, like, a thing. And if you could use that just purely as propulsion without it reacting against something else. That's kind of my, I don't know if it's physically possible to have, regardless of how efficient or inefficient or whatever, I don't think it's physically possible, I might be wrong, to just shine a really bright light and have that produce thrust because there is no reaction mass.
Can you not just strap a flashlight to the bottom of a rocket and have it take off?
Who knows? Maybe. But yeah, that's a really good question. That's a little outside of, I think, all of our expertise. But I think we kind of
trip us all up.
Good one.
Yeah, we kind of all danced around enough to give you an idea of.
Yeah.
But somebody out there is banging their head against the dashboard of their car like, you idiots.
Yes. We apologize.
Because it's probably a really simple answer.
Yeah.
That would mean they're in the passenger seat, right? Because otherwise that'd be kind of hard.
On a Model 3, you could... Yeah.
That's how angry they are.
they jumped out of the driver's seat and are now sitting
in the passenger seat, banging their head. What else do we have this week, guys? That was a good one. Why don't we just get smart enough to answer all of them? Yeah.
It kills me because, I mean, as a guy who has a channel called Answers with Joe, I get people asking me questions all the time. And every once in a while, there's one like that where it's like, but you can't because.
Well, but.
I mean, but it just.
Isn't this whole concept, the why don't they just concept, basically how science works?
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, hey, what if we did that? And then everyone tries to disprove it. And at the end, they're like, actually, I don't know. Maybe we should try that. And then, like, you try it and, okay, it didn't work, but maybe we can try this. And then eventually, bam, Falcon Heavy or something, right? Like,
yeah.
I assume that an ion engine produces a lot of heat out the back of it.
What
would happen if you stuck your hand behind an ion engine?
I don't think it'd be
instant cancer or what?
I don't know. I think you'd potentially get electrocuted.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's
a lot of charged.
Yeah. It's highly, although they also emit the negative charge at the back too, which is weird.
Ghost Rider's answer is just no hand. You have no hand.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just not there anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, what would happen if you just stood in the particle accelerator while it blasted through?
Hey, that was a little bit of news. I didn't realize. Did you guys see that they're working on a 100-kilometer loop for an accelerator? I didn't realize that.
At the LHC?
Yeah, that would be awesome.
The BF LHC?
Yes, please.
I'm going with that from now on.
I could name things.
Speaking of naming things.
Ooh.
With a lot of letters. The LVCC loop,
Las Vegas
Convention Center loop, in Las Vegas.
Let me
pull it up here.
What's the update on that? I feel like it seems like they're getting darn close to actually almost operational, right? Oh, it's a shed?
According to the Boring Company YouTuber at Boring Proof Rock on Twitter, he says that they are 96% complete.
That's a very specific answer.
As of November 3rd. But no, I just found this on Teslarati, and they've got some pictures here. As you can see under this green thing, the loop station is starting to be built. So this is the actual station that people would be going to, to get into the loop. But 96% complete. They're on the home stretch.
And this idea is, does he lay out what the idea is for this tunnel?
So right now, here's the Las Vegas loop. Right now, I think that they're only working on, so active projects are, you can't really see.
I think that light color in the middle.
Yeah, this very light color right there.
North,
and it's basically
north,
just from like the airport to the convention center, I believe. Am I right about that?
No, it's not even that. It's the convention center to look a little north, like a little northeast, right? There's like a teal. Yeah. It's very hard to see. I'm almost too colorblind for that.
I could probably blow this up a little too.
But yeah, that's the little bit they're doing first is like convention center, like back of the convention center, front of the convention center to the loop.
What's the blue?
That's what they're projecting. Like they're going to eventually want to do something like this. So
got it. Okay.
Eventually, they want to really blow up Las Vegas with a boring loop.
Blow up Las Vegas. Gotcha.
But
I've played that golf course.
I mean, they're saying it's 96% complete. I mean, that would be the first like functional boring tunnel project.
But do they lay out what is going to be inside of it? Because there's been so many back and forths, right? So the original idea was they had, it was like skates. It was like tracks, like a train. And then they bailed on that idea with the little, like a little kick blade thing. And then they bailed on that idea. And so now I think it's just a road, right?
Yeah.
And
now it's just a road on in a tube.
But do you drive into this one, or is this the one that they had where you go in and you go down into the tunnel and there's like a driver there and you just hop in one of these?
I don't know. I've heard so many different things. That's a good question.
It's the latter. It's where it's going to be like there's dedicated Teslas just for this loop.
Yeah.
That are just going back and forth all day. And I'm guessing they'll be driverless. Like this would be a closed condition that they could very safely do driverless. 100%.
So they would have to be all Model X's then, which is probably what you would want to ride in anyways.
Why?
Well, because how is the door going to open?
With the person still?
People
still have hands.
No. If it's totally autonomous, this thing needs to open the door, let me in, and then open when I... No, come on. We have to go Model X here.
What are you talking about? Why would that have to be... It's going to drive itself. I didn't say it's going to open the door for you.
Well, I'm just saying it should, is what I'm saying. I would not accept anything less, is what I'm saying.
You're going to go down there and be like, I'm going to walk these 2 miles, these 3.2 kilometers
you're like,
myself.
You're like, because... excuse me? No. I'm going
I already paid
back
for this
out
ride.
Of the tunnel.
Yeah.
And this seems so odd. I really wish they would not do this. Well, let me explain. I wish they would make a human centipede version of a Tesla down there that would just be like a tram, you know? Like, do the same thing. Dig the tunnel, do all that, but just put like a regular tram down there or something that can, you know, hundreds of people can hop onto, not like four or
well,
whatever.
That's just a subway.
But the point is, and this was, I did videos on this a long time ago, the Boring Company is building these tunnels so cheap and so fast that's all, my opinion is, as a successful business, that's all they should do. They should let the rest of it up to someone else, and that someone else should not be Tesla, because Tesla's job is, this isn't really helping their mission at all, I don't see, you know. Like, it's taking 5 cars off the road or something. Like, it's not.
Right.
You could just have Uber fleets going, and it would be the same effect. I think...
So...
Yeah.
Sorry, but to answer your question, it says they're referring to them as AEVs, autonomous electric vehicles.
Uh-huh.
It says standard AEVs are Tesla Model S, 3, and X vehicles. High-occupancy AEVs use a modified Tesla Model 3 chassis to transport up to 16 passengers with both sitting and standing room. So that sounds like more of a...
Yeah, the pods. The pods.
Yeah.
Now, that is what they're doing here?
That's on their site.
I would love that.
On the Vegas loop.
Do that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. If you don't do that, just scrap the whole idea.
I'm still in the boat, though, that even if all this is literally 30 cars going back and forth on a track, or not even a track, but just back and forth between 2 points, but they can do it quickly. They can go, you know, 100 mile an hour, 160 kilometers an hour, and then slow down, and, you know, you get from point A to point B quickly. That will take way more than just, you know, 10 cars off the road because of actual throughput. So you can think of it just like wattage, you know, like voltage versus amperage. You know, if you think about like amperage is like making more lanes, but voltage is like speeding up traffic. You know, you could either have a two-lane traffic and all cars are constantly going 10 times faster, or you have 10 new lanes, the throughput could be the same. So even though there's only two things, because it's only going from point A to point B, no stoplights, no stop anything, dedicated like that, and fast cars that can accelerate quickly and then decelerate.
Are there no stops?
There's
only
so far,
point to point?
There's three stops. There's one in the middle.
Hmm.
So, you know, you can get from point A to point B in like 5 minutes. This could be something that could be 20 minutes in a vehicle. I think you take off a lot more vehicles on the road just because of the potential speed.
Yeah, it's still just peanuts though, really, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, last time I was at CES, I don't know, there was like, what, 600,000 people there or something?
Right.
I mean, even buses with 50 or 100 people on them is like, you know, the mile of buses is like forever long. Like it's...
Right.
I guess that there needs to be high occupancy, I guess, is for me, for it to make sense in my eyes. Yeah. But it sounds cool if they are making those pod things. Is that the Boring Company website you said?
Joe?
Oh, yeah. It's lvloop.com/Vegas Loop.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, yeah, like Discord's talking about, people are saying, you know, it's just step one, small steps. You know, I think that's kind of the way I see it is like, you know, start here, prove the concept, show that it's cheap and affordable. You know, even though it's, you know, $40,000, $50,000, $80,000 cars down there, that might be still way cheaper to run and operate than, let's say, a subway car. You know, a subway train and system can't be cheap either. So maybe just a pure economics of moving X person to X distance, this still might be the cheapest, easiest solution that scales really, really easily too. That's the other thing is like, you know, start with one set of tunnels. Okay, that's going great. Okay, let's double the capacity. Let's double the tunnels, double the cars, you know, or whatever.
How much you want to bet Elon has one of these in LA that he hasn't told anyone about? It's literally like just his
own personal.
I think we'd see that in something, but that'd be hilarious.
They'd be like, how'd you get here so quick? Wow, that's impressive. You know, I was stuck on the 405.
Yeah, nothing. Helicopter. Yeah.
He's like, oh yeah, this guy's
no
down
deal. What else do we have this week, guys? I think I'm all out of space news. There's actually a pretty
Joe pretty you had something for us, right?
There's a couple other things. How about some quick bites?
Ooh, quick bites with Joe. Ooh, I like that.
Actually, I'm kind of hungry. I could use a quick bite.
For this week's quick bite,
Joe switch over to the
switches over to the.
Are y'all familiar with modular nuclear reactors?
A little bit. Where it's kind of the idea is like you have just a reactor, and it's like this big, and if you need more power, you just like have another one and you just scale it like that. Is that what it is?
Yeah. So there's a project, what's it called? The Utah Associated Municipal Power Systems, or UAMPS. There was a project that, this is kind of bad news, I guess, if you're a fan of the modular idea. NuScale, that's what it's called, NuScale. There was this project. They were going to have a big modular reactor set up by 2030. One of the things about this one is it's almost like a variable energy rate kind of thing. Like, so like, it's almost like a peaker plant. Like if the power needs go up, you can just, you know, turn on another modular reactor and scale it up. Like you could have three going, but if the rate goes up, you can add a fourth or whatever. And this is newer nuclear technology. This is something I've been saying a million times, you know, nuclear power is very polarizing. For
obvious
reasons.
I still don't get why. What are those obvious reasons?
Fukushima,
right?
Chernobyl.
Okay.
I'm just saying, like, when things go wrong, they go spectacularly wrong. But the things that have gone wrong, I'm with you on this, by the way. When things go wrong, it's on like really old reactors that from like 1950s and stuff. There's all this newer stuff that's been created and could be going up right now that is clean and
extremely safe,
yeah, more efficient and everything. And that's kind of what this is all about, these modular reactors. And anyway, so yeah, this one plan was going to have 12 small modular reactors from NuScale Power, and this was going to go up in Utah. Anyway, some people have backed out of it, so it might be pushing it back a little bit. So they were going to try to have it done, or now it's being pushed back to 2030, basically.
That's
so not good news.
Now,
but,
the spinning up and spinning down of nuclear reactors, again, this is newer technology, but that isn't a trivial feat, right? Or is it more trivial in this case?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't have the answer to that.
Because I thought the idea was like it takes years to shut down a nuclear reactor.
No.
No?
And I don't actually quite remember how you basically, if I remember right, you basically start the reaction by, you basically have like a catalyst and you have something that encourages reaction, you have something that reflects reaction, and you have something that absorbs, you know, particles, basically. So by mixing those, you can pretty quickly throttle and start a nuclear reaction. Mm-hmm. There might be something harder about starting than, yeah, than just like dipping some rods in a pool. But yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
If the plant would contain 12 of the modular reactors, which would be built to factory and shipped to the plant site. By relying on natural convection to cool the reactors and eliminating many pumps and pipes, NuScale engineers say they have designed a reactor that's even safer than a conventional power reactor, so even safer than like a coal plant.
See, we need this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a fan.
Especially scalable, the idea if these could just be mass manufactured and built, you know, shippably, you know, instead of having to do these one-off bespoke $2 billion plants that are, you know, redesigned and re-engineered every single time. It's like the, you know, the scale of, or economics of scale here could be just massive where, you know, you build these small ones in a plant in a production line and crank them out, no big deal. Yeah, I wish.
So Fukushima and Chernobyl, have there been other mega disaster versions of these or incidents?
Three Mile Island was like an almost disaster, but yeah. I guess that scared a lot of people. But again, that was in the 70s.
So I'm looking at it. We've got 440 nuclear reactors currently in the world, 95 in the United States. We're number one, USA. three have ever had issues. That seems like a pretty low rate. I mean, it's like under, you know, 4% or something like that.
There's also some that make the argument that by enriching nuclear material, that can also be used for weapons.
I'm just saying that's
another argument.
Right. And if I understand that correctly, nuclear weapons actually, like the ones that we dropped in Japan, are something like 1/10 the size of the hydrogen bombs that we have now. Is that right?
Oh yeah. Less than that even.
Yeah, yeah. Like a nuclear weapon is not, I mean, it's obviously devastating. It's terrible, blah, blah, blah. But it's like not even, so like we shouldn't use hydrogen for things either then, right? Because refining hydrogen would lead to more hydrogen bombs on the same logic.
No, hydrogen is still a nuclear bomb.
Oh, okay. See, yeah, there's something. But yeah, point being, like, that to me is not, like, anyways, in my head, that's a dumb argument because that'd be like, the internet spreads misinformation. We should not have the internet. You know?
Well,
The hydrogen bombs that you're talking about, the little factoid that I always thought was amazing, was that the trigger to set off the fusion energy in the hydrogen bomb is a conventional atomic bomb.
Right. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. That's the fuse.
Wow. Yeah.
So what if we strap two of them together?
So my big thing with nuclear is like, if you actually look at health consequences and all the stuff about people that work lifelong in coal power plants, live near coal power plants, you know, there's people saying that if you look at the actual amount of energy produced versus the health and obviously CO2 output and emissions and all that stuff, that in those cases, like, nuclear is like 1,000 times safer, cheaper,
right?
You know, on all accords, and especially modern reactors, it's like game over, you know?
Yeah. I've had this kind of on the docket for a while, but we talked about those nano batteries, the nano diamond nuclear batteries.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They take nuclear waste and they convert them into these batteries that just, you never have to charge them. They just are constantly making energy forever, basically.
And was this the one that, though, you can't recharge it? Or no, that was something else.
Well, you don't have to recharge it because it generates its own energy.
Well, and then the TerraPower thing, I'm curious if that's ever going to go anywhere from Bill Gates, right?
That's the traveling wave reactor, I believe.
The TerraPower one?
Yeah.
And they use spent nuclear waste as their fuel.
So I'm about 60%.
And it's one of those things where it's cold or something and it can't melt down, so the whole risk of that is gone.
I don't know if it's cold necessarily, but
yeah,
it's safer,
right?
That's the idea, is it's supposed to be safer.
Well, speaking of big amounts of energy, Tesla wins a new contract in the land of Oz, Australia, that is.
Oh yeah.
Tim hit me with the link. As we already know, Tesla has a really big battery down in, is it South Australia or Southern Australia? Someone please, South Australia.
South Australia.
Which is like a province. That's the name of the province, right? That's why they say that. Because I think in the video I said Southern Australia, which I believe it is. It's Southern. Anyways.
Yeah. It's actually in the northern part of Australia, but they call it South Australia.
Because that's just how it is down there. Because
everything's upside down
yeah,
in Australia.
Perfect. Yeah. I do.
It's the Eastern Virginia.
That's how
Virginia.
Australia works.
It's since the Western back, Virginia.
We've switched back to our Word of Chris Future show. Jenny, my wife, watches these Australian design YouTube channels, and some of how they call things different is so like hilarious mm-hmm. and funny. Mm-hmm. Like an electrician is called a sparky. That was pretty funny. And where you plug stuff in, like here we have a plug, they're called PowerPoints. Mm-hmm. That was kind of cute. So
and you pay for things with dollary dues.
So we have the big Tesla battery we already know of in South Australia has a capacity, originally had a capacity of 100 megawatts, 129 megawatt hours in Tesla power packs. This is actually on the older versions. They have newer versions of these that are going to be bigger and better, the mega packs as they call them. And this has been a cheaper and more reliable solution than the natural gas peaker plants, which is also why you see this technology basically spreading all over the world, because guess what? These energy companies like saving money. Surprise, surprise. And already
of them.
Yeah, it's crazy, weird, but this battery here has is estimated to have saved the people in South Australia $40 million. And the way that works, just to loosen people's minds up about it if they have any thoughts on it, is when these companies save money, that means it's lower for everybody. So it's really cool how like this connected solutions thing where they're creating what are called virtual power plants with people's power walls that they purchased into this more reliable, cheaper energy storage. It means that even if you don't own a Tesla power wall, and if your utility supports that, it means cheaper rates for you as well. So it's really cool. But now this new contract, they're looking to do a 250 megawatt battery from Neon's 300 megawatt battery operate under the control scheme. So there's just, you know, 2.5 times the original size is what they're looking to do here. And I believe it's in the same area, the Australian Energy Market Operator. So bigger batteries, cheaper, better all around. I think this will use the new mega packs, which is kind of cool because I think there's been one of those installed, and I think that was a PG&E project here in California. There you go. Neon is expected to use the Tesla Megapacks. So who's
Neon? That's what I'm confused. Like, is Neon just an energy company that's buying Tesla battery packs or what?
Correct. It says, like the previous project, Neon, N-E-O-E-N, is going to own and operate the battery system, which they're going to buy from Tesla.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Yep, it's a French renewable energy company, and it's going to be 300 megawatt / 450 megawatt hour battery or energy storage system in Victoria. So that's huge. So it's quadruple the size almost.
Yeah, I was going to say they're quadrupling already one of the biggest battery plants in the world, and clearly proving itself worth it financially. You know, forget the green aspect or the, you know, the idea of it not, especially helping to offset, you know, solar and wind. The two big problems of solar and wind is, like you guys always say, is it's not always windy, it's not always sunny, or sometimes it's too windy and it's too sunny, and you don't have anywhere to put that power. So
yeah, curtailments.
Unless you're in Philadelphia.
Yeah, this is definitely the big.
Oh. Okay, I'm glad somebody heard it.
It took me a second. I had to like replay the tape that you said, except for in Philadelphia. You know, at the end of the day, it's like this is all good news. That's the missing link to all the renewable energy ideas that have been out there and that have been rolled out. You know, I hear people be like, okay, I hate driving on the highway and I see, you know, it's a windy day and I see half the things are turned off, the, you know, wind generators are turned off. It's all a scam. Those things are always down for maintenance. It's like, no, they're making too much electricity.
Right.
They don't have anywhere
to explain
to
people too.
Like, that's a good thing. They're overproducing. Yeah. They have to be shut down because you can't put that energy somewhere. So unless
same
you have
solar.
Like this.
You know what made that snap in my mind was when I got the electric car And when you fill it up all the way, when you charge your battery mm-hmm. all the way, their regenerative braking goes down. And I was like, why does it do this? And probably one of you guys were like, well, there's no place to put the energy.
Right.
And that's when it snapped to me that like, that's why the windmills are not running, because there's no place to put it.
Yep.
That you could actually be making a lot more energy and getting a lot more use out of it if we had storage solutions yes. like that.
Storage yeah. solutions is a big piece of this puzzle.
And going back to that modular reactor thing, I didn't really get into the cost of it, but it's $6.1 billion to build that particular plant. And mm-hmm. one of the arguments against it, one of the criticisms is that that money would be better spent by mm-hmm. putting renewables and battery storage solutions.
Yep.
You could get a lot more out of it by doing that than by building nuclear plants, which I think is, you know, a decent argument.
Well, the whole thing that people keep like glossing over is battery technology is the most competitive industry in the world. It's in everything. It literally drives everything, but it's a huge, everyone is competing to make a better battery. Mm-hmm. Unlike oil, I mean, yes, there's competition to get more of it out of the ground or et cetera, but
it's
no one was working.
It's a commodity though.
Yeah, it was a commodity. This is like a technology race, just like computers or just like anything else, where you reap the benefits of a cheaper, better battery year after year after year, you know? So it's like, this is just going to get better, and it's going to be more of a easy solution and more of a, oh yeah, that totally makes sense. I think the production of them is the hurdle that we're currently working on, but Tesla has a plan for that. And yeah, it's exciting.
Ben, have you talked about JB Straubel's, is it Redwood?
Oh, right.
His company?
But it's backed by Amazon, right?
Yeah, I need to look more into that, because I find it's a recycling thing, right?
Uh-huh, battery recycling company. I forget what it's called.
Yeah.
Mm, that's right. We've talked about that.
That's
going
to be a big part of it, too, is end-of-life yeah. issues with the batteries and getting more use out of them.
Yeah, and honestly, I think it's still a problem. Like, Fully Charged did a great episode where they went to one of these EV battery recycling plants, and they walked through literally in very detail exactly how it's all done. But as far as I know, like, a lot of this stuff is still wasted, which really sucks. And the good news is that these things last forever, right? Like, a 2012 Model S is just barely coming off battery warranty. Just barely, right? Mm. So, yeah, this needs to happen. But that's one of the things. And as we get further along on the development of batteries, I think that this is going to get better and better. But really, it's a problem. And electric cars play a very small part in this. I think you did a video about that with cobalt, where you yeah. look at where the majority of cobalt goes, and it's definitely not to electric cars. It's to phones and laptops and cameras and all the other things we have in our lives that everybody has some amount of, whereas a very mm-hmm. small percentage of people actually have an electric car. So, yeah, it's a big deal. I like the fact that with batteries, you know, we obsess over this kind of little battery here, like I'm holding up, which is, you know, just this little cell, which, you know, power our cars and other things. But in reality, there's so many different applications, like the flow batteries, I think are really interesting.
Yeah, I do too.
Gravity batteries we talked about mm-hmm. before, I'm really interested in that. I mean, pumped hydro is essentially a battery, right? Mm-hmm. You're putting water up in a thing and releasing it when you want energy. So there you go. So there's a lot of things like that. I think like the ability to capture energy and use it is a key part of our renewable future for sure. And mm-hmm. it's not just one thing or another thing. It's lots of many things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's exciting though. This is the type of news and the types of things that get me thinking, that get me going like, yeah, we can do this. And there's, you know, actually solutions out there that are feasible, tangible, and a clear path forward. Like, you see the trends going in the right way. It's not like this is getting harder and harder to solve. It's getting cheaper, easier, better. And it's not an inconvenience. It can be a luxury item even. Like, oh, I have a solar panel on my house and a freaking backup battery, so I don't care if the grid goes down. I still can keep working or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. It's pretty, pretty great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Solar energy is a big part of that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think that's it, guys. You got anything else? What else are we working on?
Oh, geez. While we've been recording, I've been watching, waiting, seeing if this render is going to crash. My 1-hour-long video has been rendering this whole time. It keeps crashing. Yeah, it's hard.
You got a better computer than I do. I'd be like this the whole time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. My computer's just, it doesn't even care. It's these After Effects or something with weird with like the dynamic link where some of the stuff just gets absolute. Like I had to babysit it.
Doing that where I would render it from After Effects and then just drag it in because the combo of those, especially if the After Effects stuff was really complex, it just couldn't handle it. Yeah, I just always had to render it.
Yeah, I'm probably gonna have to. If I have to do this again, I'm gonna render it out. Especially if you had to render it multiple times. Mm-hmm. So I'm hopefully by Friday or Saturday, by the time you guys are listening to this, hopefully this video will be out. This is final. I'll still do a watch through to make sure it's okay, but it is 1 hour on the dot, exactly 1 hour and zero frames on the dot. Video about Starship, like totally breaking it down, comparing it to Falcon 9, answering I think every question I can think of that I have the answer to, as far as like landing legs, the reentry heating tiles, the header tanks, like what all the stuff is. Hopefully it'll be hopefully it'll be fantastic, and hopefully you guys can watch it. What are you guys working on?
I hope we can watch it too.
Hope you still have your vision by Saturday.
Right. I'm putting out that electric planes episode that I kind of teased last week. So, and actually after I mentioned that, I've had a lot of people bring it up. Are you going to talk about this? Are you going to talk about that? And I was like, crap. I need to add those things. So there's still a little bit of work I'm doing on
it. Isn't
that funny? That's exactly why I do these teasers all the time on Twitter, is I get great questions. They're like, hey, wait, what? And then I'm like, oh, crap. And then I add, like, I give myself that freedom to, like, have people ask questions, because you get great feedback from people, you know?
I tried to do that early on, but by the time I'd be like, hey, send me your ideas, I'm like, I've already shot the video. So even if these are good, sorry, no. It's good you guys are able to do that. I just stopped taking feedback. I'm just like,
just lives in a bubble.
Well, usually my videos are, I mean, they're in the can. There's not a whole lot I can do about it. And of course, it's just like when you normally put it out on YouTube, there's a million people that come up and like, hey,
what about this?
What about this? What about that? And it's like, I'm three videos down. I'm already working on the next one. It's and a lot of it is interesting stuff. And it's like, that might be a cool video later on. But can you add this? No, I can't add it. The video is already out. Like,
well, I think the thing that people that don't do this for a living, or, you know, aren't screenplay writers or whatever, is like, I feel anyways, a lot of the art of it is removing things. There are a bazillion details of everything you could include. Mm-hmm. And if you did that, you'd have an hour-long video explaining the difference between Starship and Falcon 9.
Everyday astronaut video.
It'd be a terrible video.
But like the challenge is to like whittle it down to just the salient points that move the story along. And in my head anyway. So a lot of times people say, what about this? It's like, oh yeah, that is a good point. But like the bar you have to clear for it to be included in my... when I do my videos is pretty high. So
My favorite are the people who are disappointed that you didn't talk about this thing that they're into.
Self.
My favorite response to that now is, buddy, you're not the first person I've disappointed today. Hate to tell you.
I'm doing a comparison video. It was supposed to go out today, but you know, there's like some political stuff happening in the US here. So I figured now is probably not the time to be sharing other videos. This one is about, so people look at the Model Y and we look at how it compares to other things and often other electric cars. This time I'm taking it against Mercedes and BMW in this space. This is the most popular space in the US, this crossover SUV segment. And so we're just kind of spec comparison, Model Y versus Mercedes GLC class and BMW X3. Which is kind of weird because both Mercedes and BMW, they just have too many models. Like, they have the X1, the X2, the X3, the X4, the X5. And you're like, what that? Like, where is like full SUV, midsize SUV? Like, where is it? Because you have five different, it's like the binary thumbs up, thumbs down. Did you like the video or not? Or like a 1 to 5 scale. It's like, you know, anyways. So, and BMW or Mercedes, similar thing. GLC, GLA, GLB, GLK, whatever. Like, so anyways, trying to nail it down to, I think, were the most comparable ones where somebody's like, let me figure out, you know, side by side, which one has what feature and all that. So that's what's coming out next week.
Cool.
Yeah, I'll be curious how it's doing against the legacy automakers.
Yeah, it's surprising. Doing it, the biggest takeaway was how few of these cars that these other automakers sell. Like 20,000 in a quarter for either BMW or Mercedes would be a banner quarter. It'd be like, whoa, great job. And we're looking at Tesla like, you know, 50,000, 100,000. You're like,
wow.
You know, but they only make these five models. They don't make, you know, 800 different models of cars all over the world. So, yeah.
Cool.
True.
It's awesome. All right, guys.
All right.
Well,
cool.
We'll see you guys next time in.
Yeah.
Our ludicrous future. Turn it off.
Hey guys, thanks so much for watching and for listening. We really do appreciate it. We couldn't do it without you.
Yeah, and if you want more of us, you can consider becoming a Patreon member where you can get early access to episodes. You can listen to us record live, join our awesome Discord community, or get your name in the show credits.
So head over to olfpod.com/Patreon to learn more. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.